Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. One of the latest initiatives of Alberta Ingenuity to help foster the growth of a vibrant research community in the province is the establishment of a new student scholarship promoting energy research. Scholarship recipient Christopher Lynn and his professor Dr. Steve Kuznicki talk about their use of nanomaterials to enhance oil sands production. And another Ingenuity scientist, Dr. Glenn Armstrong, profiles his research in carbohydrate science to develop new treatments for antibiotic-resistant gastrointestinal infections. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. This fall, Alberta Ingenuity has added an extra $38 million to the funding it makes available to researchers, and it has created a new scholarship award for students. Named in the honor of energy pioneer Len Bolger, the Len Bolger Memorial Scholarship for Energy Research Excellence is awarded to two top post-secondary students in Alberta. It's worth an extra $13,000 on top of any other grants the students receive from the agency. Dr. Peter Hackett is the president and CEO of Alberta Ingenuity.
What happened is that Len Bolger passed away earlier this year, and Len was a real strong contributor to Alberta's energy research scene. He was the chair of the Alberta Energy Research Institute and a big leader inside Shell. So we wanted to honor that and his contributions to Alberta. He was a fabulous guy. One of the things he was, you know, possibly one of the early test pilots for the Avro Arrow. So he was very deep and did a lot of stuff. So we wanted to honor that. And so together with the Alberta Energy Research Institute, we created two student scholarships for excellence in energy research. And they were to go to the top two in the competition that we hold. And there were 520 students in that competition. We awarded 100. And the top two in the area of energy, as it turns out, one was at the University of Alberta and one was at the University of Calgary. So we're just lucky it worked out that way. But the top two students get an increase to their stipend to help them on the way to kind of building Alberta's energy future.
What things do you see coming out of this scholarship and some of the other awards as far as energy is concerned in Alberta?
Well, so the big thing, I think, is to reduce the environmental impact in the oil sands and to keep the oil sands moving forward. So there's a lot of work being done to look at new kinds of processes. The processes will continue to get better and better and better. They'll use less energy, less natural gas, less water. That's a big thing. And that's where this particular student is working. He's found that you can kind of pre-process the oil sands with some naturally occurring clays called molecular sieves. And these molecular sieves, you just grind them up and heat them with the sand, and you do a lot of the processing right there. No water, no not a lot of energy required. And you'll see a little demonstration later. You know, you put in dirty black oil and sand, and you wash out with pentane, which is something that you can get on site in an oil sands operation. And you wash oil out with pentane, so no water. And there's a long way to go before such a thing would get into practice, but I can tell you that Imperial Oil are taking that really seriously.
Now, in total, you actually have $38 million that you're adding into some of these different activities. What all is that going to cover?
Oh, man. So it'd be hard to tell you it all. First thing I'll say is Ingenuity is a startup. So we're getting to where we need to be. We've been growing at 30% per year, which is quite a rate. So, yeah, $38 million this year into priority areas, energy. We've got two big oil sand centers with a lot of company involvement. Water, big issue all across Alberta. Prion research, nanotechnology, life sciences, we've got some guys here at U of A and U of C developing vaccines against tuberculosis and fungal infections. So a lot of real important stuff. I can't tell you all 38 million, but some big things happening.
Something that puts a big smile on your face, though.
That's for sure.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thanks, Cheryl.
That was Peter Hackett, President and CEO of Albert Ingenuity. Both recipients of the new Len Bolger Memorial Scholarship for Energy Research Excellence are using nanotechnology. PhD candidate Haney El-Sayed at the University of Calgary is pioneering a new generation of nano-fuel cells. The second recipient is Christopher Lin, a PhD candidate at the University of Alberta. Among the many projects that Chris is working on is the development of nano-sponges for use in oil sands production. I asked Chris about winning the award.
Well, I think it provides extra incentive for young researchers like myself winning this award. Basically, it gives me more motivation to want to exceed. And I think this award is going to be great in my course of research. It's really got me excited, and I want to do better because of it.
Now, in this lab, what are you working on? It seems like there's so much happening here.
Yeah, absolutely. We work from everything from oil sands innovations research to molecular separations. We pull contaminants out of hydrocarbon streams. We make nanometals that are supported on different surfaces. We do water treatments. We grow crystals that are sometimes grown in space. So there's a whole bunch of interesting research that we do around here.
What are you focusing your PhD thesis on?
I would say the oil sands industry. Basically, we're looking at ways to use less water when we extract the oil from the sand. Also, we're working on catalysts that can partially upgrade the bitumen from the sand before extraction. And so that's one of the major projects that I'm working on.
Well, could you give me a bit more detail then of what exactly the problems are and how you're trying to solve them with your research?
Okay, sure. In terms of water usage, right now most of the oil that is extracted from the sand goes through a hot water process. And so if you look at it, per barrel of oil, it takes up about 3 barrels of hot water. So that's a lot of water consumption, and eventually the Athabasca River is going to dry out. So that's a major problem in Alberta, obviously. So we're looking to new approaches to extract the oil without using water or uses less water. Some of these approaches may involve lightweight hydrocarbons, such as pentane or hexane, for extraction. Another thing we work on is also how do you partially upgrade, okay, unextracted oil sands. So partially upgrade the bitumen from the oil sands before it's extracted. At the same time, pulling out contaminants like vanadium, nickel, nitrogen, sulfur, and etc. Also lowering the viscosity so that transportation of this oil would be easier afterwards. So these are the type of things that we're working on.
And how about some other areas, say natural gas?
Well, that's an interesting problem because, as I know from in the United States, some of the natural gas wells are contaminated with things like nitrogen, carbon dioxide, water, and etc. Now, these things don't burn. So in terms of energy efficiency, it's not very high. Okay, so what we can do is we can design specific materials that act as a molecular sponge, and they actually attract different molecules such as nitrogen, such as carbon dioxide. So we can control what we take out of the hydrocarbon streams. So when we put a filter, and that's what these materials do, they act as filters. We put a bed of this filter right at the natural gas site. So when the natural gas gets pumped out of the ground, it passes through these filters. You can actually extract out all the contaminants that you do not wish to have and have a pure stream of methane going through. And now all of a sudden you're going from a unusable natural gas well pits into a stream of pure natural gas. So purification of natural gas is very big. And in my estimation, I think every Alberta home uses natural gas for heating and cooking and etc. So it's of immediate relevance to everybody in Alberta.
Now, your mentor and professor, Steve Krasniski, also described you as quite the entrepreneurial spirit. What do you think you would do in that area, in the area of business?
Well, business has kind of been in my roots of my family since 2-3 generations ago. So it's something I really enjoy doing, and I love it. I want to be involved with it, I think. I think with my technical skills, I want to be able to expand the horizon and take that into kind of a more entrepreneurship regime. So I want to do technical business. I think that would be a very good hybrid for me.
And I also understand you'd like to go into space.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been training hard every morning just in case the opportunity shows up. You know, NASA is funny in the sense that in order for them to fund a program, you have to be at the right place at the right time. But I don't want to regret and say to myself, just in case I get the opportunity, that my physical conditions or et cetera, I'm not ready for it. So I make sure every single day I train for it. And if the opportunity shows up, you betcha I'll be ready for it.
So when you're up in space, you'd be doing some sorts of experiments. What could you see yourself doing based on the work that you're doing now?
Well, part of what I do is advanced crystallization experiments. And basically, the nature of the materials I work with, they're called zeolites or molecular sieves. The nature of these materials are basically used or can be used as what we call quantum wires. Now, these are hypothetical, and they have yet to be established in quantities. But with advanced research, this is a real possibility. And microgravity or space environment gives you the opportunity to grow these crystals such that they are perfect. And if you can grow perfect crystals, the idea is that you can produce these perfect quantum wire structures or advanced semiconductor structures that may indeed revolutionize the entire quantum computing industry.
Chris, I wish you all the luck in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Cheryl.
That was Christopher Lin, a PhD candidate in chemical and materials engineering at the University of Alberta. He is one of the two recipients of the Len Bolger Memorial Scholarship in Energy Research Excellence. It is jointly sponsored by Alberta Ingenuity and the Alberta Energy Research Institute. Chris Lin's supervisor and mentor is Professor Steve Krasniki. Steve comes to Alberta from New Jersey, where he worked as an engineer and inventor with one of the largest industrial research companies in the United States. His discoveries have brought more than 50 patents to market. Now an Alberta Ingenuity Scholar in Chemical and Materials Engineering at the University of Alberta, Steve is busy applying his inventive mind to improving oil sands production. And one area his lab is researching is nano-sieves.
Well, what we found is that molecular sieves are widely used to crack petroleum, and they're also widely used as adsorbents. And while the things that are currently used to crack petroleum are rather expensive synthetic materials, there's mountains and mountains and mountains of related minerals that that are so inexpensive that upper-end uses for them might include kitty litter, literally. So we came up with the idea of taking these minerals that are related to cracking catalyst, crushing them up, putting them in with raw oil sand, and trying to crack the asphaltenes in the oil sand, trying to make a product that much more resembled crude oil. And we're finding not only does that happen, but that when we crack the material, we selectively crack the bigger molecules, leaving the resultant mixture soluble in things like pentane and hexane, which are solvents that can be made on site and can lead to waterless processes. But also we're pulling out the nitrogen, most of the sulfur, and most of the heavy metals that make bitumen so hard and so expensive to process. So we're slowly moving toward taking oil sands and doing a treatment on them that leaves them looking much more like normal crude oil.
Now, another area that you're working in has to do with changing the way that we make ethylene. What's happening there?
Right now, ethylene is made by heating ethane to very high temperatures, a little bit below 1,000 C. And the thermodynamically stable mixture at that point is about an even mixture of ethane, ethylene, and hydrogen. We're looking at adsorptive ways to pull the hydrogen away. And if you pull the hydrogen away, you drive ethane to ethylene. We're making both bed-type adsorbents, but we think more promisingly inorganic membranes out of rocks, believe it or not, should allow passage of hydrogen without passage of any hydrocarbons. And at least in principle, this would drive ethane to ethylene at much, much lower temperatures, not just saving energy, but also avoiding a lot of the byproducts that are made in the conversion of ethane to ethylene.
These silver balls, you have to tell me about the silver balls.
As I've told you, I hate the word nano. That's kind of 21st century snake oil. But we have found a way to get metal to roll up into tiny little particles. And in the case of silver, we can make these particles anywhere from about 2 to about 30 nanometers across. 2 nanometers for silver in a ball would be about 5 atoms across. I mean, and you're looking at a picture up on the wall of how uniform they are. Nanosilver is an extraordinary antimicrobial agent. It's used in everything from impregnation in fabrics to kill bacteria on people's skins, to bandages, to some people actually eat the stuff. I'm not sure I would. And there's some precedence to believe that it might even complex and kill HIV. The problem with nanosilver is that the current methods of making it are so intricate that the cheapest we've been able to find it is a 1% solution of silver at $1,700 a liter if you buy it in quantity. The process we have to get metals like silver to roll up into little balls is so simple and so straightforward that the major cost is the cost of the silver itself. And we can make these little things nominally more than the price of the silver. That has implications not just in medicine, but perhaps in antifungal agents for agricultural applications here in Alberta. Perhaps as a general antibacterial agent for livestock. Nanosilver is the only nano material in the world I know of that actually is a growing industry. It's about a $2 billion a year industry supporting about 60 companies, and they appear to be growing. What we have is, what we think is, the ability to make these things at maybe a hundredth of the cost that they're currently made at.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Steve Kuznicki, a professor and Alberta Ingenuity Scholar in the Department of Chemical and Materials Engineering at the University of Alberta. He holds an NSERC research chair in new molecular sieves, and he's also a Canada Research Chair in molecular sieve nanomaterials. Tummy upsets can be annoying at their mildest and deadly at their worst. One scientist investigating novel treatments for gastrointestinal problems caused by agents like E. coli 0157 is Dr. Glenn Armstrong. Glenn heads up the Department of Microbiology and Infectious Diseases at the University of Calgary, and he's a principal investigator with the Alberta Ingenuity Center for Carbohydrate Science.
From my perspective, it's interesting because we know that all sorts of different microbes, so bacteria, viruses, and also parasites, use host carbohydrate sequences as docking systems in order to attach and colonize the host to cause an infection. So by understanding the interaction between these microbes and carbohydrates, we can come up with novel strategies for interfering with that docking process, and those strategies will have important therapeutic applications in preventing infections from occurring.
What is it that you're working on right now?
Two bugs that I'm working on are enterohemorrhagic E. coli, or E. coli 0157, the bug that causes hamburger disease. Also, Clostridium difficile is another bug that we're working on in the AICCS. That's associated with what we call CDAD, or Clostridium difficile-associated disease. It's an opportunistic infection that occurs mostly in hospitalized patients that are undergoing antibiotic treatment for one reason or another. What happens is the antibiotics wipe out the normal bacteria that are living in the intestines, and the Clostridium difficile can come along. And because they have inherent resistant mechanisms to conventional antibiotics, can now colonize in the intestine, and they produce toxins that can cause diarrhea. That's the mildest form of the illness. They can also cause more serious forms of colitis called pseudomembranous colitis, and also megacolon, and even perforation of the bowel and peritonitis if in the most serious cases. And these bugs also use carbohydrate sequences, as it turns out, on the host cell in order to cause these clinical symptoms. So we're working on a way of using that, the recognition of host cell carbohydrate sequences, to come up with a novel way of treating these Clostridium difficile infections.
What have you come up with so far?
Well, in collaboration with David Bundle and Pavel Kitov, and also here in Calgary with Ken Ng, we're working on coming up with specific carbohydrate sequences that can block the toxins that are the primary virulence factors that these organisms have. And the idea is to have these in some sort of a non-absorbable form that can be fed to patients that are infected with the bacteria, so that they'll go down into the intestines and bind to the toxins and prevent the toxins from interacting with the host cells, and so they'll just be eliminated from the body without causing any damage. And the idea behind this is that the current treatment for the condition is to stop giving the antibiotic that precipitated it in the first place, and switch to another antibiotic that the Clostridium difficile is sensitive to. But there's problems with that approach, because normal people do not get infected with these organisms. The organisms can only infect a person if their normal flora has been destroyed by antibiotics. So these bacteria are actually quite wimpy. If you've got a healthy, normal flora there, the Clostridium difficile is unable to really get a foothold in the intestines and colonize and cause any damage, because it just can't compete with the normal flora. The normal flora outcompete it, and so it's called competitive exclusion. So the bug can only get in there when the normal flora has been removed, and then that opens up a niche where it can colonize. Of course, if you're still using antibiotics to treat the organism, you can't keep a patient on antibiotics forever. You can eliminate the organism with antibiotics. But then when you stop the antibiotics, there's a race is established where what comes back first, the Clostridium difficile or the normal flora. And if the Clostridium difficile has got an advantage and comes back first, then the diarrhea comes back. And so you're back on antibiotics. So anyway, the idea is to come up with a non-antibiotic type treatment based in carbohydrate science that will neutralize the toxins, prevent the illness, but won't affect the normal flora. It'll allow the normal flora to get reestablished, so that now you've reestablished the normal environment in the intestines, and now the Clostridium difficile can't come back and can't cause recurring illness.
Well, would this be similar to eating something like yogurt after you've been taking antibiotics?
Well, sort of. I mean, the idea behind yogurt and things like this is they're called probiotics, and it's similar in a way, in that what you're doing is you're trying to basically provide good bacteria, non-pathogenic bacteria, to competitively exclude the pathogenic bacteria or the opportunistic pathogens. And so yogurt is kind of along the same lines as that. The carbohydrates that we're proposing to be feeding to individuals, they're not alive or anything like that, so they can't replicate or anything. I mean, they're biomolecules that are designed to specifically interact with toxins and prevent the toxins from interacting with the host cell. So it's slightly different, but it's similar in that, again, it's an oral product that you would eat. And in many cases, carbohydrates, of course, most of the food that you eat have lots of carbohydrates in them, right? So it's basically food. One of the tricks is to, sort of make it come up in a form where it's not just simply digested by the body and absorbed into the body as food, but, you know, gets to the site in the intestine intact so that it can bind to the toxins and cause them to get flushed out of the system. So it's typically you've got to come up with something that's not going to be digested and absorbed as food, but it still can be taken orally. And because it's derived from food, then there are no safety issues related to you know, treating with these types of products.
How far are you from having something like this commercialized or on the market?
It's hard to say. We're working now on coming up with some structures that could be useful in treating Clostridium difficile. We have some animal models that we can use to test the efficacy of these drugs. Also, there's a population, a patient population base here in Calgary that would benefit from these drugs. So once we've proven safety and efficacy in animal models, it should be possible and relatively straightforward process. And we have clinical investigators that are also Dr. Tom Louis, the head of infection control for the Calgary Health Region, is very interested in Clostridium difficile and how to treat subjects with this infection. So he's indicated an interest in helping move anything that we discover into clinical trials. So we have certainly all of the elements that we need to do clinical trials with this product once we get the animal results. If we can find a company that's interested in you know, commercializing this product.
Thank you very much, Glenn.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
That was Dr. Glenn Armstrong, professor and head of the Department of Microbiology and Infectious Diseases at the University of Calgary. He's also a principal investigator with the Alberta Ingenuity Center for Carbohydrate Science. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our e-newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by Alberta Ingenuity, the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Genome Alberta, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, the Alberta Conservation Association, University of Lethbridge, Alberta Research Council, and the NSERC Industrial Chair in Integrated Landscape Management. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.